Welcome, everybody. It is BMP Weekly episode 115. It is 22nd of February 2021. And pretty soon it's March, which is pretty wild. Spring is coming. Woohoo! We still have plenty of snow, but that doesn't actually... Well, spring is still coming. Never mind. I'll just walk away again. In the BMP Weekly, we always talk about the latest in Microsoft 365. Typically have a visitor and then the articles. My name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in OneDrive SharePoint engineering side, but working, of course, across the Microsoft 365 ecosystem. With me as a co-host is a cloud advocate. Are you already used to that term, Waldeck? You're no longer MVP.
Every day a little bit more, yes. Yes. It's still all the time to say, like, well, we at Microsoft, like, hold on a minute. Yes, that is true. It's no longer them. It's us now. So
you can't say that it's not on your fault. So it's
That
Microsoft is not
Exactly. Yes. So that is the one thing that comes with the job. Like, among, like, there are many perks, but one of the things that comes with the job is complain. Like, you can no longer say, well, Microsoft. No. Well, it's us. And even though, like, it's a big place, like, I am in no position to fix anything. However, I can fix a printer.
What do you mean? Of course you can.
But yeah, yes. So yeah, it is absolutely an interesting thing to realize. Yes, it's no longer them. It's us now. And yeah, you're now part of the ship. Got a row.
Yeah, exactly. But for this week, we do have a visitor as well. So from Valo, you have a nice hoodie as well, explaining that. Yarbas, can you do a quick intro to who you are?
Definitely. Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, my name is Yarbas Horst. I work at Valo as a product owner of a tool called Valo Teamwork. And yeah, thank you for the invitation. Along with working at Valo, I'm also a Microsoft MVP and a community contributor and father and many things.
Yes. Not going to ask the order of things, obviously, but anyway. You've been a MVP for a year or so?
Almost maybe 10 months. I was talking to Alexei Sodomov, a colleague of mine. He has been MVP for 10 years, and we had this comparison. You know, you have been MVP for 10 years. I have been MVP for maybe almost 10 months. So tell me how that is, being an MVP and the work involved with community contributions. And, well, it's something we do in our free time, you know, contributing to the community. And it's great. I have my main work is with the documentation. So I have been fixing, reviewing documents from SharePoint, Microsoft Graph, and, you know, you use that in your daily work. So I'm really happy to give my feedback, my contribution, fix things, and so on. And that helps, I think, others as well. And that makes me happy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you've been really active on that one, just to say that Jarbas has been really active on fixing or improving the Microsoft Graph documentation, which is really good, which indicates that you've been working on that side a lot recently.
Yes. Well, we use that nowadays work as part of our tool called Valo Teamwork. It does provisioning, creation of teams, and so it includes different parts of Graph. Yeah. And, you know, for me, it's important that the information that is presented there is accurate as possible. Now, since I use that, I like to have that as clear as possible, so for others.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, being now on the inside, I can tell that docs are a very important part, like, to us internally as well, but to everyone else too. Because whenever you want to do things, like, it's the first thing you will go to the docs, right? To see how things work, what are the how you call things, what you get back, permissions, and whatnot, right? So, like, all the work you put into it, like, that is very relevant to everybody, to every dev out there, because that is basically the place from which they start, right?
Yeah. And not only for devs, which is one of the topics of today, because obviously
for people who want to build things.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. Because typically devs are the ones who, depending on a company, are being told that you need to do X and Y and Z. But somebody needs to actually know what's possible and then tell them what they are supposed to do. And this comes back on Jarvis, something what we talked about before we started the recording. You've done gone through this kind of a role change as well, like actually me and Waldek as well in our past.
Yes.
Being as a developer, and then moving into this more ownership and coordination architect role. Can you talk about slightly on that change and that journey?
Definitely. No, that's like it's interesting. You start your career, you spend a lot of time increasing your knowledge, trying to understand the tools and then how to work efficiently with them. And well, I have been a developer, and I'm still a developer, but from 2011 till 2019, doing SharePoint and then Microsoft 365 development. And it means spending a lot of time during my daily work and also after that, because, you know, it's important to also spend time after your work hours and learn the tools and how to use everything. And then you get an opportunity to move to a more soft area. Which includes other responsibilities, other skills, skill set, other than, you know, like being technical and writing code and what's something I really love. But then it's more about communication towards partners, customers, understand customers' issues, trying to solve that. And this is how it is now for me. And it has been very interesting. I used to have Sebastian Levert as a mentor. Now he joined Microsoft. that helped me also a lot about how to communicate to partners and so on. So it is, but it's still like a big transition. I wasn't sure, is that what I want to do? Do I really want to, I don't want to say drop all that knowledge that I have, but can I still take advantage of that in my product, in my new role? So that was a big, I took a couple of days to think about that. And that helped me also to talk to other people like Sebastian Levert and so on. We see that in our community happening as well, you know, like many people start as a developer and then they at some point get an opportunity to be, a product owner, a team leader, maybe a consultant. And how easy is that? I mean, it wasn't that easy for me at the beginning.
Yeah. What made you, let's say, look beyond the hedge or consider even like the change? Why not stay being dev forever?
Well, I think you can be a dev forever. I have in my team people who has been developer for 20 years, and they are very knowledgeable, very, you know, like they see the product and they understand very quickly what that means, and it's impressive. I have one guy in my team. It's just amazing to work with him. So, and on the other hand, I thought it is an opportunity to try to improve the product from a different area, and maybe to try something new. You can say no, but I think I'll try that. I'll give it a try. And I had a talk to my manager. We thought, you know, let's try that for 6 months, and if that's not going to work, then we can change again. But it has been working fine, and I'm happy with the position.
Yeah, I think it's always dependent on the team and the skill sets, because of course you need to have a technical people, but if you only have technical people and awesome developers, then whatever they do don't necessarily match what the customers and partners want to actually be there or want to use. And it's an interesting dilemma on collecting the right skill set of people.
Yes, I mean, you know, I spent the first 2 months of this new role talking to partners, to customers, trying to understand the problems they have, trying to understand can you sell the product? Do you have everything you need? What areas should we improve? And from the customer's perspective, what's about the usability? Do we have the features you need? And that was, you know, like you need to start seeing the product from a different point of view.
Yeah. So if you think about your change of jobs, right, being more than the past versus being a manager now, What do you find the hardest part of the change?
I think like you cannot make everyone happy. That's the thing, and you need to be aware of that. And you need to be aware also like it's a product. It's not an individual solution that you are building. So if you get feature requests from people, then you think you start thinking about the budget, time, ensuring quality, and you know having all these factors while building something. You know, you can spend a lot of time trying to create something and making that perfect, but then you need to ship. You need to ship that. People need to use it. Then you can collect feedback, or you maybe have a strategy where you get people involved already during development. I think like the communication and remembering, I have a list of things to think about when developing the product. It's not an individual solution. It's a product. This is like my I'm looking at here because this is where my list is. I always when I get an email, I have a look at it. Okay, it's fine.
But and of course, all of this is 100%. If I think about my role as a program manager, I'm in a slightly different role as a typical program manager, but as a typical feature program manager in Microsoft, it's exactly what people need to do. So manage, collect feedback, and do experiments, and then tell the developers what they need to do, and then do some final testing and validation, making sure the documentation is being done, and then being responsible of driving adaption for the feature as well. So it is a quite versatile set of skills which you need mm-hmm. to have to be able to be successful in it. And then that also means that you need to kind of spend your time pretty broadly rather than on a specific things.
Yeah, you cannot only focus on development. No, I'm going to take today here to develop that feature. That doesn't happen. I have teams here and right now here I see like the messages are coming. So this is how it is. And I try to organize my day this is in this hour I'm going to do that and that so you can get the things done. Because you need to work together with marketing, with the sales team, you need to be there for the developers, you need to be there for the partners. And as you mentioned, it's a lot of skills that you now need to have or try to improve.
Now on that one, let's put you on a spot on that one. What would be the top five skills to be a from your perspective on the new three to five?
Well, as I have been saying here, like communication is definitely a very important topic. Being also able to listen to feedback, tolerant as well. To accept the feedback, to accept critique. They come as well. It's not only about your product is the best, but it's also here. These are the areas that you need to improve. Yeah. I think these three are very, very important. Time management. Yeah. It's also something very, very important to have. If I would not like organize my day, I would not get things done. So this is definitely a very being able to present. Sorry. You can keep like counting, you know, you are talking to the board of directors, you are talking to partners, you need to be able to sell your product, sell your ideas.
Absolutely. Now something what you said, which was actually really good, which doesn't actually quite often necessarily being said, is the tolerance for feedback and tolerance for negative things
empathy.
As well.
Empathy.
Empathy from point of being able to understand what your customers are doing. But that actually, let's come back on that one in a second. But tolerance is actually really good as well, because quite often, if you've been a really good developer in the past and moving to a program manager role or a product owner role, then you need to have obviously tolerance for your new development team, because you can't say that, well, let me show it to you how it's actually being done. Yes. No. Even though you would have the skills, but you're being expected to do something else.
But long term, that wouldn't fly.
And then the other is kind of an interesting perspective is the tolerance for the public feedback, because of course, all of us are potentially here and there in social media doing things. And guess what? You will get a lot of negative feedback because people there are trolls, there's people who are just trying to poke you and all of that stuff. And managing that incoming feedback in a way that it doesn't influence you too much, because some of that is complete nonsense. Any thoughts actually from either one of you related on how to deal with negative feedback, just in general, and then we can go back on the empathy empathy. I can't pronounce it.
Empathy.
Yeah. Yes. but how to deal with the negative feedback? How to deal with things? Any good learnings related on that?
Well, that we want to.
I mean, for me, it sounds simple. It isn't. Ignore it. Seriously, like at some point, like basically you think of it as fire, and every response you give to it, you basically put more fuel to fire, right? So you only keep discussion engaging. Like if I get a comment that isn't constructive on my blog, I delete it at times. Sometimes not, depending on the tone. But if it's not constructive, saying people hate it, it's stupid, it doesn't add anything. Like I don't need everybody to agree with me, but be constructive about it. Say this doesn't work because X, Y, and Z, or this is bad because reasons. But just saying something is bad because something sucks, that doesn't help anybody. So no. As such, it's just basically like one ear in, the other one on out. And it's like even then, there are times where it eats at me and it sucks and it takes time. But it's basically that.
Yeah.
I mean, in case of like the blog, it's a different topic, you know. Like in that case, I also ignore if there are things, you know. Okay, for instance, this company sucks, for instance, or something like that. It's not going to help me or the readers, so I don't publish that. In case of you know, customer feedback, partner feedback, then it's a different story. I try to understand, does it make sense? If we are talking about, you know, like the people criticizing the product, then I try to think about that. And are they comparing to a competitor, for instance? Does it make sense? So in that case, I take that seriously and try to rethink if what we are doing does make sense or not. But you know, de-escalation is also a very important skill that you need and to have to talk to people and make them understand what's the situation. And can you solve that? And then also being honest, transparent to people when they're criticizing. You know, we have a limited amount of resources. We have a limited amount of time. We cannot do everything. And here we are again with that topic. You cannot make everyone happy. So I think transparency is a very important part.
It is the one thing that took me like a long time to learn is that like the first reaction you have to when somebody would give any kind of critique to your work is defense, right? Because basically somebody is calling your baby ugly, right? So it's like the first thing, like, no. But then when you think about it, like, I think it's like one in 100 where you really hit a genuine troll, like somebody who is really out to get under your skin. But like everyone else, they might start from negative place, but often the reason for that is frustration. Like they have been trying to do something either with your product or something you have done, and it doesn't work, and they're stuck, and it stands in their way of doing the things they have to do. So, you know, they're being angry. And then like once you can get past that anger, like no, calm down, tell me what's wrong, and they will say, and then realize I get it now. Yes, you're right, it's like we can improve on that, or maybe like I didn't explain it well and I missed a step because I thought everybody knows while they don't, right? So it's really often like if you get the patience to get through that first hurdle, to that first emotion, like you can really uncover the true meaning behind feedback, as opposed to just saying no, that's like the way you're saying is wrong. I will not engage with you. I will ignore you because you're communicating the way I don't want to be talked to.
And one way of also what is super valuable and related on that, what you said, basically going back on the person and start asking additional details, being open for it, being transparent, and basically, okay, so we clearly have an area where we need to improve. Can we elaborate? Can we have a discussion? If the person is a troll, typically at that point, they will, well, that's you know that are they a troll or not, because there's nothing additional behind of the feedback. But if they're not trolls, they typically might have a lot of valuable inputs. They've thought about it. They're just frustrated, like you said. And then when you go and have that one-to-one discussion or collect additional feedback or show the emphasis towards a person, they will actually might give you super, super, super valuable information.
Yeah, I think the frustration is indeed a very It's the thing. And what I try to do, you know, rather than writing emails, is to have a call as soon as I can. And then it can really clarify and try to understand the person, the problems behind the frustration, and then try to help them. But I think like talking in that case, in this, you know, where people are really frustrated, is very important rather than just writing chats. And you sometimes you can't express yourself enough with words, or cannot explain things well. And then sometimes we have like we use English as a common language for communication with all the partners we have. So in that case, it can be also a blocker if the language is not good enough.
And also maybe another aspect to that is a culture. Like here in the Netherlands, we are used to be frank and direct. In the US, for example, that is total opposite, right? So while despite our best intention or like trying to be really short, concise to the point, maybe the other person is not coming from the same place, and maybe that's not the way they used to communicate. So that's also something that we need to learn, especially now that like we work with people all over the world from different backgrounds and cultures, experiences. That is even more important than ever. And that's unfortunately like one skill they don't teach at school. So
and then we have being tolerant, and that's it, you know. We work remotely, we are talking to many people. You need to be patient and tolerant again. That really helps.
What's your, and just out of curiosity, Charpas, you joined a Finnish company, and Finnish has a different kind of culture on handling things as well. Any good learnings related on that? Any good smiles on the cultural things? Or is it just a myth that Finns are super straightforward and blunt as well?
No, I mean, I like the Finnish people. But before getting there, it's not because of work at all. I am from Brazil, actually. So I have been living in Germany since 2010, but I am from Brazil, and I have been living in Germany, and now I work at a company from Finland. I have already been in Finland and spent weeks there, and I like the culture. People are, I think they are polite in Finland, and they work hard. And we, for instance, they're very open. We have our brainstorm sessions inside the team, and everyone's contributing. Team players. This is how I would see the Finnish people.
Huh. In a way, to be honest, like no. So actually, from what I know about you, Vesa, like that makes perfect sense. Like if you think about if I think about like everything I know about you and the way we worked over the years, it's exactly that. It's not about yourself. You're not putting yourself forward. You basically let everybody else shine.
That summarizes
very much it. Yes.
Cool. It is. I mean, and also, like, if I think about my company and the management, and this is how everyone works, that they are team player. And, you know, together, you can move things forward. And this is what I see, like, happening at Valo. It's not only about the individual. It's about the team and doing things together to you know, make, at the end of the day, the customers happy. Yeah, this is how I would describe that.
Cool. Now, should we get back still on the empathy discussion and the value of empathy, being empathetic person for an APM, or did we already dig that through? Just silence. So, well, one thing maybe related on that one, if you are a developer, kind of a classic developer, and yes, developers are super, super valuable for any company, and developers who deliver, and you can give them a task and then they do that. And then some of the developers, they want to do the task, and then they want to go home, and then they come to the following day and they do the task again, and that's completely fine. That's super valuable. It's a different skill set of being a PM or a program manager, for sure. But in the PM work, like we kind of touched already quite a few times, being able to understand the role of the customer or a partner is absolutely a critical piece. So understanding that, okay, if I put myself on their role, they need to, or you can read the conclusions out of that as well, or the product features out of that as well. Absolutely.
Now, another thing that I am interested in, and that is more personal thing, because I went through exactly the same change, as you said, a while back, right? I used to be a dev, then I became product manager, then I became head of product, now I'm doing different things still. But the one thing that I found really hard, and it took me like really long time to wrap my head around, like being a dev, at the end of the day, I can see like the things that I've done. I can see the code that I've done. I can see, yes. I can, at the end of the day, I can really easily see that was a good day or bad day. Being a manager, there is no code. Like at some days I would have meetings the whole day. So at the end of the day, I recall that it was very hard for me to say, was it a good day or not? Like when am I satisfied with my day? So yeah. I wonder, how do you experience that, Jarbas? Like basically going through exactly the same. Do you already have a trick for that, or are you still in process of trying to find like how do you decide whether you had a good day or not?
I mean, for me, like I have a good day if I created something that I can share with other people. It doesn't matter if it's like outside my work or inside the work. What I try to do, I believe on selling the dream, selling things before you have it. So what I try to do internally with the partner communication is like to create videos, for instance, and share that information to them to validate my steps, my ideas, the way we are developing. And when I see that, that I published it and I start getting feedback, that makes me happy. And I try to do that once a week. So at least once a week, I have a good day. So in that sense. But it's very difficult really to, you know, did I have a productive day? This is at least how I would call that. You know, if you are spending time in meetings and that happens indeed, that's very difficult to, okay, was that a good day, productive one or not? I think when I'm sharing content and talking to people, that makes me happy.
Yeah.
Cool.
Should we jump to the articles, and we'll come back on the discussion for a while. So let's actually go through this. So sharing my screen. Now, a few articles from Microsoft side. Actually, surprisingly slow week last week. It might be that everybody is just super busy on making things. This would be in the range of winter holidays and then being super busy. So it's kind of understandable.
Well, I mean, we have this big event coming up in a few weeks. So that could be also that too.
Could be, yeah. So we're kind of delaying some of the announcements and all of that, which is true as well. Yeah, absolutely. Now, for the Microsoft Teams side, enhanced productivity of Microsoft Teams with pop-up apps and tabs. And this is really about the fact that you can actually pop up any chat or an application to an individual window. And then you can have multiple ones, which is actually pretty cool. This works surprisingly nicely. So you can actually, the classic story, at least in my side, is that like 150 teams and a cajillion amount of chats, and then you can, the fact that you can pop them out is super important, so you don't have to switch between the views. So really cool as well, and improvements there. Now this one is from a Satin, Microsoft latest AI-powered audio codecs for real-time communication, basically walking through the updates on here and adjustments on the Microsoft Teams side and how we can improve things and how the audio encoding is working. It's actually interesting to think about, if you think about, let's say, the Microsoft Teams as a product, quite often we don't even think about how much work there goes behind of the scenes related on audio and video encoding and optimization, all of that stuff, because all of that is like behind of the scenes happening just automatically. So somehow magically we can see each other.
I mean, there is a camera, it records stuff, and there is a screen.
Yeah. How difficult can it be? Exactly.
There is a microphone, you talk to it, and you have headphones, and you hear stuff.
Exactly.
I see what he's saying. Yeah, I mean, it is.
It isn't that way?
But a lot of improvements on this side as well, and then optimization, and I think the background noise cancellations and all of that stuff on runtime, which is like, wow, so yes. Mind-blowing. The back screen removals, and so it's a lot of interesting stuff happening there. Now, this one is from Emily Mancini, Synproxys Consulting, from the Microsoft 365 PMP blog. So adding custom metadata through content back in learning pathways. So from the learning pathways, which is a really cool solution for SharePoint Online and for Microsoft Teams for automatic learning materials. And this really walks through how you create a custom content pack. So how do you modify things and walk through the process? So really cool from that perspective. And then Louisa Fries had a how to send adaptive cards with CLI Microsoft 365. Why would you do this, Waldeck? I'm going to put you on the spot.
One of the things that I like to think about is that imagine that you want to have a script that will check whether your tenant is operational or yep. you're looking for a report of size and you have a report, you could send it via email. But nowadays with everybody in Teams, an adaptive card might be a better way because yep. it's already in the place where you are. And it gives you this really great way to show structured info in a way that doesn't take a long time to get in place. And that looks great on your phone, desktop, web, and whatnot. So you don't need to worry about formatting or not. You can just basically build a card and then overlay data you want to show in an easy way to read. And even then, add actions to it. So that card can have action to go to an API to see more info or something and whatnot. So that is, I think, a great way to do it. And you can do it like with CLI, I think, two scenarios. Automation. Every morning I want to have a report of my sites, or at scale. Let's send this card to 10 people who haven't updated their profiles since a year.
Yep. Yeah. Really cool. Good stuff. Adaptive card is being more and more adapted across the individual products. So it's really, really good to see that progress as well. Now, Charpas, your latest was around Speaking Ship and Klubi, which is a Finnish thing about the employee onboarding on a digital era. Do you want to actually talk about briefly and what was the conclusion or the key topics related on this one?
The SharePoint Klubi is a customer event from Baltic Company for their customers. And the idea was to, we are experiencing challenging times with the current pandemic and working remotely and even having your first day remotely without seeing anybody. If you think about Microsoft Viva and the example with Mia, at the end of the recording. So they present the first day of Mia, everything completely remotely and how that can happen. What you should have an onboarding process. If you have this experience where the first day at the company is just maybe you don't have even an email welcoming the person. If the first day is just about, here's your laptop, here is the documentation, this is the next project, you should think about that. Yeah. And that's something, sometimes I have already experienced that in before, it can be like this. Sometimes what I have heard from people is, for instance, the first week is, here's the SharePoint list, here are the tasks that you have. And after 1 week, we will see where we are. You can do that in a different way. We have right now the tools we need. If you are using Microsoft 365, everything is there. You could use Microsoft Teams to onboard people individually. This is the onboarding space for John, for instance, yes. or for Mia. And in that workspace, you could have a plan for managing all the tasks related to onboarding process of that person. You could bring content from an intranet inside Microsoft Teams so that the new employee will have all the information that he needs in one place. So all the tools, they are there right now. It's just about configuration, putting them together. You can automate the process with third party if you want, but everything is there. You could even configure everything manually if you want. So we should use the tools we have. And if you are using Planner, for instance, we have that Task Pack Planner app inside Microsoft Teams, where as an HR manager, you can see all the tasks related to the onboarding process of John, for instance, and you can have an overview. So We have everything we need, and we should take advantage of that and put things together. Yeah, I think I like to talk about this human aspect. It's important. It is very Absolutely. Important. You might get to a situation, you have the recruitment process from planning, interview, assign the contract, then you have the onboarding process. Does the recruitment process end there, or does it continue? So from my point of view, it should continue, and it's about human, talking to people, communicating to them, making sure the employee will continue at the company after the probation period, giving people feedback, how is development going, getting feedback, do you like our company? You should have a process in place, and I think Microsoft Teams is the right tool for that, can be the right tool for that.
Yeah, it's certainly not about technology. It's all about human beings and human relationships and building those processes and making sure that there's a process in place. Now, Waldeck, just out of curiosity, your onboarding to Microsoft has been completely remote as well. So you've never seen the people in your organization even. You met some local people from Microsoft for giving you a laptop, I think.
No, No. So
no,
actually,
you haven't even done that.
It came from the States. Yeah.
So, which is a good example of a onboarding being completely remotely. How successful was it for you, or how hard was it for you?
If you think so, in a way, I don't think I am a good case for that because like I've been around Microsoft for 12 years. So basically, I crammed my month of onboarding in 2 days.
Yeah.
Because I know already the market. I know the kind of the tools. I know all the acronyms and dictionaries, and I know what we do for work. So like in that sense, I am different than, let's say, your account manager who's joining the local sub and you used to work at another place and you need to learn the customers, the market, the products, the like how you sell. So everything is new.
Yeah.
Right. But I guess the interesting part there is that, like you said, it's not about tools. Again, it's about empathy. Like, what is a new person is going to need to work effectively and to want to stay, Yarbus, as you said, to want to stay with us beyond their probation period. And sure, like tools can help you with that, but it requires you to take the step back. Like, first acknowledge that you have somebody new on your team. You have somebody who wants to join, who like took the risk and chance. And how do you convince them to stay? How do you sell them on the promise that the company has, right? And it comes down to like first realizing that, like acknowledge that there is that thing going on. And then you have to go from there. Like, okay, what are their resources? How do we help them meet new folks, right? Because like in my team, I am in a team of 10. But then beyond that, there is like another team of 700 DevRel folks. I haven't met, like, how do I reach out to them? Like, because that there's like this dynamic of like basically the same way you go to a party. If the room is too big, you will be lost. If the room is too small, well, you might get to know one person, but there's so much more out there. So like, how do you facilitate this kind of safe space for people to reach out to other folks, work with them, get to know them, and then learn about what is there to do, right? Because like maybe there are things that we can do in our team, but there's also so much more. So,
And then also the cultural differences between the companies. The one thing works in one company doesn't work in another company. So because of the culture, and leadership, commitment, and all of that. So,
and this is one challenge that management, HR departments, team leaders in general are facing currently from my point of view. Now, bringing people together in times where we don't see each other. I mean, physically, you know, it's so a big difference. You can see people and talk to them. But now everything is happening like we are doing right now here. I just see you here from my computer. I don't know, you know, like it's also—
Are you actually a real person? So, yes.
I'm a Teams-driven AI.
Yeah, I can ask that also. Like, but yeah. Yes, that's the point, you know. This challenge, people are facing that currently, and you need to be innovative. You need like different skills from what you had in the past. In the past, you could have a breakfast and put maybe everyone together in one place or have a dinner. It's more challenging now. It's, you know, you get to a situation, or we are in a situation where it's more about performing.
But also there is this another interesting thing, because like if I think about my previous job, which was also remote, but we like all of us worked in the same geography. So we could have had like coffee call at 10 a.m. Like, but now my 10 a.m. is evening in Australia, middle of the night in America. Like my team is spread across the globe. So there's even less chance for us to have this serendipitous moments of, you know, like let's catch up. Because it's either my end, like it is end of the day and middle of the night for someone across the globe somewhere.
Yeah.
So that is even a harder thing to bridge. But I guess like if we find a way to do that effectively, that will really change the game for everybody.
Simple solution. Let's align the world to a single time zone. Done.
The world is flat anyway, right? So
it's just like
flip it on the side towards the sun and then flip it backwards, like problem solved, right? It'll be day for everybody, evening for everybody.
Yeah, if we... Anyway, so... Patrick. Now let's get back on the discussion. Let's continue on the articles. We'll close up the articles and then let's talk about the things. So this one, Microsoft Graph SDK update from Darrell Miller from last Monday. So the latest Microsoft 365 developer podcast. Really great podcast from Paul and Jeremy. So really concentrates on the Microsoft 365 developer side of the house and good discussions with Darrell last week on that. Now, Peter, get started with adaptive cards and Power Automate. So again, adaptive talked about adaptive cards and Power Automate and how we can do automate stuff over there. Super powerful experience and a nice summary of things and steps how to make things happen again in the Power Automate side. This one is actually 1 week old because, sorry, Leon, we missed you on last week. So download Microsoft 365 usage reports using Microsoft Graph in Power Automate as well. So Power Automate is definitely the easiest way to automate operations. And then this is really around collecting the data and automating that thing. So a good long blog post as well, Azure Functions, calling that one, collecting the information. Really, really powerful scenario for sure. So really, really cool stuff. Ilya had a new blog post related on using Docker in GitHub Actions for your documentation. I think Valo is actually using this as well for automating and extracting and doing documentation in inside of SharePoint related on API. So how is it actually being used?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that Elio has been managing. But I know we use that internally. I haven't been in touch with that much.
Yeah. Anyway, so documentation in Markdown, push it to SharePoint. So basically create SharePoint pages from the documentation, which is in Markdown format. And that's actually really cool. And it works with a partnership with CLI, doesn't it? Microsoft 365 CLI. So.
Correct.
Don Kirkman had a blog post related on certified Microsoft 365 Developer Associate. So basically focusing on what are the options, how do you prepare, what is being measured, not obviously explaining what are the questions are as such, because that's, of course, not allowed, but walking through on this process. And he apparently got 822. That's actually a pretty cool number.
Which is a pass.
That is a pass. Yes, that's the most important thing. Absolutely. Good way of validating your skill sets for Microsoft 365 development is the certificates, and that's the whole point of that. Now, then we have two YouTube videos, one from Aika Bas. She's a cloud advocate in the Waldex team. Building bots on Microsoft Teams Toolkit. And this is a really great video. So 17 minutes, just starting from scratch and creating the Microsoft Teams bot in the Teams Toolkit, deploying that, talks about all of those options. And so really, really great job as well. So awesome, awesome video. And it has already 804 views so in a few days. So that's actually pretty nice.
One more thing like about those videos, they also have subtitles, and the subtitles they get translated also with the help of the community. So it's something you can contribute. I have already done that for German. And yeah, it you learn also a lot from watching the videos and translating everything.
Absolutely.
Then we had a episode 142, creating Teams tabs with your Teams from Paolo. And Paolo is basically walking through the different ways of using the YoTeams V3, which is rather a new thing. Victor Villain is leading that effort. And then how to get started on using that. So really cool stuff as well. Paolo is also collecting feedback related on his mustache. And I know that he's actually collecting feedback related on that. So it's a good thing.
And we have three for yay, no for nay.
Yes. Anyway, so I know that he's debating on, well, should he keep on doing that or not? So let him know on Twitter and social media. Lorian Strand had a good article, a simple workflow to create a to-do task for Microsoft Teams messages. So a really cool, simple way of doing that. So tracking then the tasks for yourself using the Power Automate actions. So because it's actually quite simple to do this in the Teams. But if you wouldn't know, how would you know that it's a simple thing to do? So
everything is simple unless you don't know about it, right?
Exactly. So. Exactly.
Yeah. Typically the case.
Indeed. Then Robert Crane had an article around email overrides and not best practice. Wow, email overrides are not best practice. Email overrides.
I think this is more about Exchange settings. Like, how do you set everything up with policies and rules and settings? Yeah.
And automation there. So cool. Really good from the recording 365 as well. And then a final reminder, Microsoft Ignite is in March 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So within 2 weeks.
Today, when we're recording that, it's 2 weeks. Yeah. When you're watching that, it might be already going on.
That's true. It depends on when you're watching the video or listening to the podcast. You never know. So, but that's happening. And I think this time it's more aligned. So smaller sessions, more kind of a sneak videos and kind of a giving and generating interest rather than doing 90 minutes breakouts. Mm-hmm. It's even if when we were meeting people in the conferences, the 75-minute breakout started to be painful because if it's a boring topic, you don't want to sit there for 75 minutes. So,
well, but I mean, even it is if it is an interesting one, it's kind of hard to focus really because it will go deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It's hard to stay focused for over an hour in a packed room.
Yep, absolutely agree on that. So having a flow which is keeping the audience,
engaged, interested
on your topic. Yeah, exactly. It's really, really hard for 75 minutes. It's just insane.
Yeah, and you have one, this is one topic, like in the conference, and they are going to have eight sessions in the day that you want to attend as an attendee.
Yes.
You know, like staying focused is impossible. What I started doing with my sessions is try to have like a maximum 30-minute session. So you can, you know, I think people, especially when attending from home, you know, then you get emails, Teams messages, and you cannot stay focused. I think like 30 minutes is already quite a lot of time.
Much, yeah.
I think we're having discussions related on Microsoft build plans, and it might be that we're heading down to 15 minutes because then there are snackable videos and covering topic and all of that stuff, but to be defined and to be decided. So anyway, I think every single organization is still in kind of this progress of how do we do these remote events. So just as an example, we are executing a dev kitchen related on Viva Connections this week, invitation only. I do apologize that we couldn't invite everybody from the community and all of that stuff, but this is a early preview still on the Viva Connections. But on that one, how do we deliver? Dev kitchens have traditionally been like 3 days in Redmond in auditorium and let's build stuff together. How do we do that remotely? It's a really interesting dilemma.
Across
how do you
time zones
that,
also.
Across time zones and all of that. So, so now we have two-hour sessions in the morning Pacific time and then remote work and all of that. So that one way of kind of reducing the allocation. There's no point of having 8 hours of content, rather remote support and then just concentrate on the main topics. But even 2 hours worth of content, that's a lot. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. And we'll have even more on the future. There's going to be, obviously, Viva Connections is the big thing for my organization, especially the Viva Connections and Viva Topics. So we will have Dev Kitchens. Dev Kitchens are before going to beta. Beta will come at some point, and then everybody can get access on things. So, but we need to do Dev Kitchens. Well, this comes back on the program management and the project owner. We want to do Dev Kitchens so that we get early input on the designs before we push it out more broadly to thousands of people, because whenever there's thousands of people testing, there's too much feedback potentially. So having a 100 people now remotely or 150, I think, has been registered, which are doing stuff, then we'll collect the feedback. We know what we need to adjust. And then we do, again, more public betas based on that. So
yeah, it makes sense like to get people involved as early as possible to collect the feedback, and also for the people creating solutions based on top of Microsoft 365 to see, okay, do I need to change my product? Do I need to consider something different? Can I build on top of that? Can I bring a value with my solution?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it helps us as well. And thank you for inviting. I know like it's limited, but it's good to have someone there.
Yeah, Well, these kind of events are a good example why people should be involved in the community and being an MVP and all of that stuff, because all of that gets you pre-access and, mm-hmm. and early access on things. Because all of the MVPs are under NDA, and under NDA we can talk about things more freely, even though we wouldn't release the feature necessarily at all. So, but we can actually kind of tease around our plans, and then maybe the MVPs say that that's completely nonsense, and then we can cut it. So. Well, in this case, we're not going to cut Viva connections, that's for sure. But, but still, that would be a pretty rough conclusion out of the
dedication. Well, I guess and there's also another angle, right? Because like even if the thing might be right, there's also another angle to it. Like getting, like when you have early access, you can also test the way you communicate things, the way you explain things. Yeah. And then you can see, hey, maybe the technology is right, but the way we talk about it, we need to adjust that, because some things aren't clear. Some things raise eyebrows. Like people don't get it. Why? So that is also really another point. Thing.
Yeah. A really good point, especially considering the Viva announcement, which we had, because a lot of the partners and customers, especially partners, were like, okay, so what is our game plan in here? You didn't tell about the extensibility. What's happening here? That was a lot of the feedback, which luckily Jeff Deeper and a few others then jumped on it, and we shared some teasers. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we can't share too much because we're still pretty early on this journey, and we need to make sure that it's locked until we share more openly the model. So, but it's going to be based on SharePoint framework anyway. So, and SharePoint framework is going to have a huge role in the Microsoft Teams related on Viva extensibility, and not just the Viva extensibility, but a lot of investments on that area, which is not that big of a surprise. Mm-hmm. But it again confuses people. Why I call it a SharePoint framework, because it's only targeting for Teams. We don't want to introduce a new name.
Might change. Who knows? I mean, but, you know, in general, it's very good to validate your ideas. Even if you're on early stage, I mean, actually, it is a very good time to validate and to get feedback and give feedback, give information. And maybe, as Waldeck said, you know, like rethink maybe the way how we're developing that. If it's a good time, then this is the time from my point of view. It's beneficial from my point of view for everyone involved in this project.
I think we talked about this one in the past so many times that in the past, and we actually do have a lot of these failures as well. Whenever we were shipping a product in every single 3 years, as a Microsoft, as an example, same applies if you would be a partner. If you bet on something and you don't get the feedback early on, and then you invest on millions and millions of money on some feature, and then nobody actually uses that, and you're like, well,
Too late.
It's already shipped, and now we need to rethink the following version. So, unfortunately, just in the SharePoint world, I still remember there was the search-driven .com sites and all of that stuff.
Brilliant.
Huge investment, and pretty much nobody used it. As an example, so
I used it. I was the only one.
But it's a really good. Luckily, the whole industry is heading more and more to the direction where we do experiments, we do testing early on. We as a Microsoft, we enable things in Microsoft 365 for 10% of users first, and then when they start, if they start complaining, then we cancel it back. There's an interesting way of
handling the whole thing, right? It's like you can't do that because cloud first. So you don't get to think for things that you need to then print on the master disk and then burn every like millions of volumes of stuff that are shipped and you can never update. Like that is gone, right?
Yes. Luckily. So, luckily.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that also allows us to work faster, short-term feedback loop. Get feedback early on, but it also requires us to be aware that that is an option, that we should do it. We must do it every single time there is a new feature. We need to do that. We need to think about how about we get feedback early on to hear, to validate that we are on track with this one.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Cool. I think it's time to wrap up. Anything interesting from your side? Charpas, let's start from you. What's happening this week? Anything super interesting?
Yeah, we are. I know I'm going to talk about that here. We faced an issue with the Microsoft Graph API for creating Teams, and we are working with Microsoft on getting that fixed. So this is the topic for me this week, along with getting ready for webinars about the AI employee experience next month. I'm going to have three of them, so preparing material, learning more about also Microsoft Viva. And but yeah, like the focus currently is about that Microsoft API issue. But we're moving forward.
Yep, that's positive way of approaching. Cool, that sounds good. What about you, Waldeck? Anything specific on your table?
You told me.
Oh, that's true. You're joining on the. You're going to join us on the Dev Kitchen, yes.
Correct. So yeah. I'm curious to see what you have cooked for us and what are the options, abilities, because also on our hand, in my team, it's important for us to know as early as we can to help then phrase again, messaging, help you with docs, help you with anything you might need to get features out there, help developers use them. And also help everybody else to understand what is the value of that. Like, why would they care, right? So going also beyond devs, like maybe a level up to call it technical architects or whoever understand technology to understand not only that you can build, but also why would you care?
Yep.
Right. So that is why we try to get engaged as early on as we can. Other than that, like we have quite some new PRs for CLI for Microsoft 365. Elio is unstoppable. He is working because he builds a Docker SSG. Mm-hmm. He's seeing like a lot of areas for us to improve and enhance. So we're getting one PR after another, like, hey, how about we be able to do things on pages or things on sites? Like, yes, awesome. I mean,
that's how it works. Like, and rather than everybody building their own whatever individual things, let's build together. Yeah. So everybody benefits out of
it. It's a win-win for everyone, right? So we try to support him as much as we can with that. Other than that, I'm planning some time this week to experiment with development on Teams. Like I am no longer building stuff for customers. So to me now, to stay in touch with the market and our tooling and whatever we have to offer, I need to carve out time explicitly to basically, okay, this week I'm going to spend some time. How about actually build an app or a bot? How is that experience for everyone else?
Yeah.
And then try to think back like, okay, so these are the areas we can improve. Here we have gaps. This isn't clear or this is great.
Just one feedback to you about that. I spent considerable amount of time on the Microsoft Docs and your articles, they are very good, very well written. It's very easy to understand the content and you don't do a lot of I mean, I haven't seen any typo yet or things where the format isn't good. So you are doing a very good job from a community Thank member you. Point of view.
Thank
and
you.
A technical writer, so.
Thank you.
Cool. Quickly on my side, obviously, the Dev Kitchen is the thing. 1.12, SharePoint Framework 1.12 is intended to go live pretty soon. We actually, unfortunately, found a one server-side issue. And then server-side issues are always problematic because it's not about shipping a new client-side packages. We need to ship stuff server-side and then virtually roll out that worldwide before the issue is being resolved. So now we're having an internal discussion. Do we delay? What do we do? But I would actually prefer actually delay so that whenever the stuff is out, it actually 100% works. But again, it's not a dictatorship. There's multiple people behind of all of these decisions.
An opinion, which is good. Exactly. Yes. You have an opinion, which is good. Everybody else is also entitled to have an opinion.
Exactly. So we'll find the right ways. But the Dev Kitchen, absolutely. We're using 1.13 already on that one. But then 1.12 is the SharePoint Framework version, which is coming faster. And then there's a lot of improvements coming. So we just need to get everything documented and out. So that's always the challenge. But anyway, that's pretty much it from
now. We're on
now.
It. Should not take long.
Yeah, exactly. That's
but how working long? On it.
Well, depends.
Tuesday. Hey, Tuesday.
We don't want to ship it until we're 100% sure that stuff works properly. That's the thing. So
it's good.
Anyway, so thank you, Torpus, joining us today. I think we're hitting the 1 hour marker as well on the recording again, which we're always trying to reduce it, but we can't. So all good. Great discussion and all the best for the new role and for the product as well. So
we'll
definitely stay in touch.
Thank you, Arvind.
Those who are watching and listening.
Yeah, you basically keep saying that, but you guys are awesome.
Thank you
for the feedback. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, who's listening. We will come back with a new BMP Weekly within a week. Bye-bye.
Bye.